Hello, welcome to the big show. he said they've all been talking and they're all stunned, by the way. Because that's a true story. But don't say what it is, because then I'll have to proper edit. Welcome to the big show. We're here to discuss all the big tech that's gone on in the week, all the fancy stuff that's happened. One of the fancy things that has happened is that Campion went out for a beer last night with Mark Culshaw from Hoya, and they got pissed. And he agreed to go to the launch of Uniku this afternoon in a place in York, which is brilliant. One of the opticians in York. Superb. So he's been there and he's had his face measured, and we'll talk to him about that. But the trouble is, he left it a bit late and he's stuck on the A64. So he's dialing in when he gets in. So, starting us off, instead of Campion top left, we're going to go Jeffrey top right. On Skype, dude?
On Skype. So fix my problem, I had to go through and find literally every Skype-related file on my computer and delete it.
Okay.
And then reinstall and start from scratch. And it's working, but it's still a little flaky, but, you know,
Skype. So you installed the desktop version or the store version?
I'm running the desktop version.
Yeah, see, that's the problem, is that the desktop version leaves litters stuff all over the place. One of the reasons why Microsoft's been working so hard to try and get people to use stuff from the store, because when you take something out of the store, it just goes away, kind of like things do on the Mac, where you remove something.
That would be nice.
The Mac only lets applications put things in their folder, and that's it, whereas Windows historically has let you just put stuff everywhere, right? So you can...
Well, is Skype even on the App Store?
Yes, it is.
I'm going to look right now.
That's done deal, man. Yeah. He's going to get himself. He's downloading two things: a, clean my Mac.
Oh my God!
AKA, get this shit off. And then he's going to put Skype from the store in.
Skype is not on the App Store.
Oh, on the Apple Store?
Yeah.
What? Oh yeah. Well, no, nothing's on the Apple Store.
So. My name's Jeff Gamma. I work for the Mac Observer. Why don't you get it off the Windows Store?
Sorry. I thought I was using a real computer.
And well done, Jeff. And the Apple apologist that you've just heard is Atlee Hunter. The man who in 2 weeks' time is going to start the Mac Show on the British Tech Network.
No, the Microsoft Show.
Oh, my mistake.
Oh, well, you should totally do the Mac Show. I think you'll rock that.
Yeah, he's good though. No, you can do the Microsoft.
I'd have to dust off my Mac.
Joking. You've got one. That's impressive. Most Windows people come on here just throw their fingers up in a cross.
No, I mean, two or three. I have Linux boxes. I've got Macs. I got everything.
Well, you develop those.
So. It's the best tool for the job. I just find that for me, most of the time, it's Windows.
I'm going to clip that so it says, I've got a Mac, it's the best tool for the job. I've got a Mac, it's the best tool for the job. It's loop backwards and forwards. Muller Biker's awesome. Ecstatic because he says we could do with a good host for the Mac Show. Bastard. I'm like, hang on, let's just kick him just for fun. Right click. Kick. There we go. Boom. He's gone.
Did you kick me?
No, I kicked Muller Biker. See if he comes back in.
That's awesome.
That was fun.
You, child.
Yes, and that's the point. Being a child is fun. Muller might not agree.
You know, we could wrap up the show right now. I don't know how you can top that.
My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. And you can get Muller Biker at Pissed Off on Twitter. But he's coming back. Come back, Muller. Muller, it was a joke, mate. I won't do it again, I promise.
Well, Mac Show host just joined.
Nice one. Good burn there, Muller. Let's kick him and all. Jeffrey, welcome, mate. Next to him, Atlee. We've done Atlee. Hello, Atlee. How you doing, mate?
Not bad, man. How's it going?
It's all right, pal. I'm just really busy because I'm going out this weekend. I haven't done your logos, and I really must.
As soon as you do, then I can put this up on the store. The store kind of kicked it because it didn't have good icons and stuff. So
welcome back, Muller Biker. Yeah. So what do you want a logo of? The Microsoft Show?
No, 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 no. The logo for British Tech Network so that I can make the chat apps for all the British Tech Network.
Oh, right. Okay. I can do that while we're introducing Ian Grant in, so that's not a problem. I was thinking I had to draw the logo.
No. Well, that I need, but that can wait a little.
All right.
That's a little slower. I was wondering why it was taking so long to get them, but that's probably because I didn't explain it well enough.
No, okay. It's because the host's a twat. All right, mate, don't worry about it.
Yeah, I'm wrong.
You might need to Google that. Next to him, in a rather depressing-looking hotel from the 1970s.
Yeah. That's the building behind me, actually.
Oh, but mate. Yes,
I'm overhearing Sunny Reading.
I did say to you before the start of the show, what's the high point of Reading? It's that it's not Basingstoke.
Or Slough.
Or Slough, especially Slough.
I've been to both those places, and I can guarantee you this is the better. This is the better place. I mean, I'm at the rougher end of town where every mouth breather, assorted moron you've ever seen, walks up and down the street outside of here shouting at each other. And we did have a guy who was threatening to jump off the motorway that's just outside the road here and into the flow of traffic the other day. So it's a classy, classy neighbourhood that I'm in.
Yeah, super.
But I'm down here once a month. Now I'm teaching the Convault Certified Professional course for Convault over in their head office in Reading here.
Okay. Prestige then?
Yeah.
Mister?
I'm a certified trainer and all sorts of things.
Oh, my life.
People believe me anyway. Ian, I mean, I've been getting away with it for years.
General useless Grant. Well done, mate. Congratulations. I was going to say something then to back on. Oh, yeah. Deep Pan says, are you in the Crossroads Motel, Miss Diane?
No.
Now you've got the beard, mate. If you put a Benny cap on, you could be.
I know.
I
was just thinking about, we're trying to think what Benny used to say so I could have.
Miss Diane.
Miss Diane, yes.
Yeah, no.
That's it, isn't it?
Yeah, no. I'm filling time while I'm sending Atlee's logos.
The Americans, that was a really old soap opera that used
to
run.
No, make them Google it. Tom VF loves this shit.
It'll give you hours of amusement.
Tom in San Francisco, I put stuff up like I'm on the rattler to the smoke, and he's just like, what? And he has to start Googling it. Then he works out, I'm on a train to London. And last but by no means least, Mr. William Green.
Hey, hello. Didn't they reboot Crossroads?
They probably did.
Can't have been a good thing.
No, they probably
did. I'm fairly sure they did.
And it was probably twice as bad.
Yeah, no, it wasn't my cup of tea. I used to like, when I was at college and stuff, Neighbours, lunchtime, that was always rather jolly. Or a cup of tea and Neighbours in the afternoon. But, that was good. So good. What else I got to say about... Oh, you know, I've got some good stories. I know I've got that.
Well, they're actually funny you say that, because we did get a letter. The letter I can't find right now. But it was basically about something to do with the right tit.
And my God.
And I did write back explaining that the red wine came out of the left tit. But maybe I got the wrong gist of it somehow, Greeny. Maybe that person was referring to something else about the right tit.
Well, yeah, obviously, well, there it is. I mean, you know, each their own.
It was a legendary story. Oi, I've got to edit that now, and I've got no time this weekend, you bastard. 8 minutes.
Oh, sorry.
8 minutes. No swearing today, you bastards.
So are we going to drop an F-bomb every 35 seconds?
Well, the show won't go up if you do. you'll be waiting longer than you do for your frigging logos, that's for certain. Which I've now sent.
Nice.
There you go. William, it was a joke, and we love you dearly.
Oh, that's kind. I love you all too. All of you.
And we're going to wait on camping when he comes, and we're going to take the piss out of him for getting his face measured by Uniku.
Why is he getting his face measured? What's it all about? I don't get it.
So you haven't been listening, have you, when I've been doing the sponsor reads for Uniku?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, brilliant.
I'd say pay attention. I would say pay attention, Greeny, but you're obviously not, so there's no point.
He's too poor to pay attention.
Okay. Yeah. But no, the thing basically scans your face. And it effectively means that you get the glasses fitted so snugly to your face that they are unique to you, and they are. So
okay.
I'll wait till Campion comes in and I'll put the picture up that he took off and then we'll know. So there we go. The Week in Tech, all the big stuff that's gone on. What would be the first story you would like to cover, gentlemen, and who's first? Muller's put a link in the chat room, but I'm a bit dubious about clicking it, as all people should be on Muller links in chat room.
That's just
a picture of Benny.
Life lesson.
Benny Hawkins, there we go, and he thinks that looks like me. No.
Goldfinger.
I don't look like Goldfinger at all.
No, because doesn't he, old Ernest Blofeld, doesn't he have his face done, and then he goes into that... Yeah, he has his, a new face, doesn't he, old Goldfinger? Well, he's not Goldfinger, right. Ernest Blofeld.
Stavros Blofeld, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he has it done as well. But I don't think he's having new glasses. I don't think it's that.
I don't think that Campion's going to come in looking any different, mate. just
be rather
insightful.
Yeah. All right.
So I can't. Atlee needs a link to watch the show, and he can't watch it on what he's got because he hasn't got Flash on it. I'm guessing. I've been filling time like you wouldn't believe, boys, and no one's posted a story in the chat room.
There we go.
Thank you, Ian.
Go on.
Holy moly, that
was
too
hard. I'll make some FM. New version of Android out.
Oh, it's from Ars Technica.
It's from Ars Technica. Can't be a bit of ass.
moving on.
Good journalism going on there. So we've got Android 9. It's P for Pi, and it's dropped live today. If you've got a Pixel device, the updates should start appearing on it soon.
See, this is wrong. They've already had a Pi. They had Keyline Pi.
They did.
They can't have Pi. That's wrong.
What other sweetie can you think of beginning with P, though, for?
Pistachio.
That's nuts.
Exactly.
Right, but no. But those are nuts.
I thought it was a really good suggestion, Andy. Greeny's just got that.
It could have been Android Popsicle because it sucks.
I have to say, as a leaver from Android, I'm kind of in that boat. I'm back on the Apple phones again now. I had a Pixel for a while. I liked it, but it's a noisy OS. Anywhere you walk, a little notification pops up. Oh, looks like you're in the shop. Would you like to post about it? No, I wouldn't. Bog off. Put it back in my pocket. Walk 500 yards down the street. Oh, looks like you're in Primark. Would you like to? No, I wouldn't.
And you don't get it, so that's not...
Android is basically an operating system version of Clippy.
I'm beginning to be insane. We live just across the street from a large outlet, and every time I turned my phone on until I found out how to turn the damn card off, it would say, would you like a map to go around the shopping centre? No, I wouldn't. Go away!
Sounds like an awesome user experience.
It is, and I didn't notice really it was that bad until I went back to having an iPhone. And the silence is overwhelming. It's again, I've just got a 7 Plus. It's nothing particularly clever or flash, but it's a great phone. It does phone things. It does app things. It doesn't cause me any grief, which is a shame. And I'm now all gone Apple-ish when I should be talking about the new Android. I hope it's better than the previous version, because back to my complaint was, Android was incredibly intrusive and noisy, I found. At least in that was, I was a Pixel, so I was running the latest release of version 8, Nougat, not Nougat, what were we on? We're Oreo, weren't we? Oreo. And the battery life was poor, but then again, that's Android all over. It's always been poor. Again, they're promising with the new version we're going to have. So what's the new... I might as well sell the new version a tiny bit, hadn't I? New version... They're getting more gestures and things, and a bit like, if you've got an iPhone X, you can get some gestures to move around the interface. They've jumped on that idea. Now you can swipe up to do various things, swipe left and right. The bank button's going to disappear, apparently, as part of that. So if you've got an app that supports new gestures, you won't have a bank button. And it'll only actually appear if you've got an older generation of the app where you could need to find the button. So, well, that sounds quite nice. But there you go, Android's launching.
I've got to say, you're not selling it, really, for me.
I know. I'm possibly not the one to sell it.
But for the 12 people that will actually be able to install it, it'll be great.
this is it. Well, I think anyone with a Pixel device, those updates always seemed quite well. In yeah, as much Pixel as it, all the ones I got on my last device installed nicely and didn't cause me any aggravation. So,
yeah. so is this...
That was perfectly fine, but very noisy OS would tend, I found, to...
Is there a separation, though, Ian?
Pardon?
Is there a separation, though, where the vanilla version that comes from Google that you install on your Pixel doesn't do the all year in Primark bit, or and it's just a...
No, that seems to be a feature that's on function. Most of them now. It's but I would, I mean, I went, and the thing is, I deliberately bought a Pixel because I didn't want
the extra
any
garbage.
The other vendor or the other vendor's junk on top of yeah. what you get the bloatware. I didn't want Samsung's whatever it's called now thing that sits on top of the Android OS. I thought, no, I don't want that. I didn't want the only other one that I found that's got anywhere near like a decent interface is Sony's.
So this is
that's the only of the Android devices I've seen that seem to keep the clutter of their own kind of need for installing 15 million apps to a minimum is that. It's got a little health app in it as well. I think that's on the screen now, which just yeah. will just jump past because I've got a delay, obviously, watching the video stream. So there's lots of bits and pieces in it, lots of new...
I'd like to second that.
More point release improving again. They reckon it's going to be great from what I can see. And there's quite a few articles online. You can get to see sort of what the new bits and bobs are. So I know I'm probably not selling it the best thing in the world, but it seems to be.
There's a lot
it was interesting that it's dropped quite quickly because they weren't expecting it to appear quite as soon as it has.
There's a lot of core dysfunctionality in this, then.
Hmm.
Yeah. Greeny, you were going to say something.
I was going to say, I second that. I'm a big fan of the Expedia range. As you say, they don't sort of bloatware too much. And I've had a couple of Sony devices running. I'm not a massive Android fan, but out of all of them, I think Sony does the best job. Their Expedia range, brilliant.
Yeah.
I've had tablets and phones.
The cameras. And that's the other thing. I took two pictures in the same place, the same selfie shop, in fact, it was in the US. It's the one on my Facebook profile with my wife. And I took the first time I took this, I had an Xperia Z, whatever it was at the time, and we took this selfie with New York in the background. That's great. And then we went back like a year before last from my honeymoon. I said, well, let's take the same picture again. We're in the same bit. All right, we did, and there we go. I get the camera, and I had my iPhone. I had my iPhone 6 then. Couldn't get us all in. Couldn't get the background in. Doesn't have the depth of field in the camera.
I'm not going to knock it for that, though.
No, I agree. But yeah. That's the only thing I found, that one thing that those Sony phones framing really could do is make a decent camera.
Yeah, I mean, the thing we used to get questions like, oh, Ewan, what's the best compact camera that's on the market? And I always said the best compact camera is the one that's got you in other people's shots rather than them in your shot. Anything that went back to 24 millimeters thereabouts was perfect. So there is a certain something in that, but... Generally speaking, the iPhone does a very good job of pictures. I thought the Pixel did a good job. There was some really lovely stuff in the Pixel. And I really want to get my hands on a Galaxy 9 because if all the Shazam in the advert about, you know, the aperture for human eye is true, then that could be brilliant, unless it's just HDR shit, which it probably have to wait.
Yeah, just turn green up. Just turn the green up till it really, really hurts your eyes, and then that's HDR.
No.
I know, it's just how it looks. Whenever you see every estate agent in the world now takes their pictures with HDR.
Yeah, but
so when you look at a picture of any house, you've got the most violent green grass in every house I've ever seen when I was looking at buying a house. It's ridiculous. And they use fisheye bloody lenses as well. That's even worse.
Well, that's just lazy because they can correct for those. So it looks natural, but you still get the wide field of view. So.
I'm being a grumpy old man again, but there we are.
Well, so you've put this in. You haven't got a phone that's Android-enabled. No. Just thought you'd come in and give it a good kick.
Maybe. Give it a good kick.
Maybe.
That's pretty much it. That's all you've done, isn't it, Ian? It's like, here's a story. I've got it off Ars Technica. Bar humbug.
Bar humbug.
Here's a story about something I think is garbage, apparently.
I'm a millennium. Yeah. I doubt it very much, mate.
You're not a millennial.
I'm not
maybe
a millennial.
Maybe the last millennium.
I've got the beard now, but I wasn't born. I was born in the 70s.
You nearly made me say a swearable word then that would have required editing this weekend. No. Okay, so we're not keen on it. I've just my problem is it's just my OCD is like you can't have pie. You can't have pie because you already had key lime pie, so you've done pies.
You've done pies, yeah. Yeah. You can have 19 different pies because you have their desserts. They're not pies. If they'd start off with pies,
I could even cope with cherry pie as a C. But I know C's gone. But you know what I'm saying? If there's a mango pie, you could have mango pie. I'm all right with that.
So they could have pumpkin pie, which is something said already.
Yeah, they could have had peach pie, pumpkin pie.
Quinoa pie. There we go. Quinoa pie. I don't know if you can make pies with quinoa. But quinoa pie, that would be okay. But you can't have just pie. Not okay. Wrong.
The elephant in the room, I think, is, Brussels pie is one of the most popular peaches in the world. And if I was raspberry pie, I would be a bit nonplussed about this. They're sort of, in some ways, they're looking at the raspberry pie and thinking, oh, we'd like a chunk of that, forgive the pun. And is that one of the marketing reasons that they've used the word pie again, I wonder?
I don't know, but Matt Batwinch has put in the thing about me and her having our fair share of pies, which I find very, really insulting. Greenie, are you watching the live feed at the same time? Because your video's shit, mate.
It's terrible, isn't it? It's I'm in the hotel, and when it comes to the evening, I think people are downloading all sorts of stuff.
I've been done, boys. Well done, Pete. Windrider in the chat room, he's put, Key Lime Pie was eventually released as Kit Kat. You can't have it. He's right. He's right, isn't he? It came out as Kit Kat. It was going to be Key Lime Pie.
I forgot about the Kit Kat thing.
I'm wrong. He's got me. Well done, Pete. Mate, top of the shot for
nice.
You, pal.
Good.
Yeah, that's a good nice. Steal. Yeah, I'm really wrong on this show. Oh man, I've nearly wet myself. That was utter bollocks.
No, genuinely looking at the Wikipedia page, we haven't.
We haven't had a pie. Have we?
No.
There's no pie. There's no pie. I'm done.
There you are. Ice cream sarnie, jelly beige, Kit Kat.
I'm deferring to a greater thing there. Sorry, Pete. Well done, mate.
Calling it pie, that's
still
lazy.
Shit. You could have had pecan pie, couldn't you? And it'd have been fine. P for pecan. There you go. Pecan pie. Who'd have thought of that one?
Pecan pie. Peach
cobbler.
How about they're releasing at the end of the summer? It could be pumpkin pie. It'd be almost seasonal.
Yeah, they should have held on to it for a couple of months. That would be good. They should have held on for this until Halloween and released pumpkin. Definitely. It's lazy. I just find it lazy. That's what upsets me more than anything. I'm corrected on the
pie. You can't do mince pie, Muller. It's not an M. It's a P.
Mate, that wouldn't stop Muller. Nothing stops Muller. Good story, Ian. Who's next?
Me.
Pizza pie. Well done, Batwench. Well, that's very American because we don't do pizzas aren't pies for the UK. So.
I got a story in there.
Oh yeah, you have. You shoved it in. Well done, mate.
Nicely done.
Microsoft. I hate this, right? See, this really pisses me off now. It's like I put a story up. I want to see the story, and half the frigging page is a cookie exception. And it's just like, why can't it be tiny in the corner? Why has it got to be half of my frigging story? And then a Harry's Razor advert. Screw Harry. He's a tosser. Right. Microsoft,
yeah,
sure.
So Microsoft changed the store app, yeah.
How is this? I've not gone in the Microsoft store since I had a 1020, and that's a fair old time ago. I've never been on a desktop, so... So what's the significance of the change? Treat me like I'm a Mac user.
Okay, so instead of going in and buying one thing and then having to pay for it and then buying another thing and having to pay for it, and let's say you want to go into the store and buy a game and a whole bunch of add-ons for it. Well, before you used to have to go in and do each one separately. purchase it, buy it, get it, purchase it, buy it, get it. It was a real pain in the ass. So now what they've got is a shopping cart, just like normal stores that people are used to online. And you go in and you add things to the cart. You can either hold on to them and wait and come back and finish your purchase later, or you can just go in and buy all the things at once, do the payment once, and be done with it. So it makes it a lot
more streamlined. This is the interesting thing for me there, Atlee. I was ready and prepared to take the piss out of that for like, well, a shopping cart's hardly new, is it? But actually, there are no app stores I can think of that have got shopping carts.
Exactly. And the other cool thing is it's also added devices to the shopping cart. So you can order a device from your Windows device. You can order your next Surface. You can order your next whatever you want to get, Xbox, and ship it to you and do it all the way through your device.
Yeah, that's pretty cool as well, because the Apple let you do your devices and it let you have a card. But the iOS store and the Mac App store is single purchase only.
Exactly. So this combines that whole functionality, so you're going to have it all in one place.
There's a Google one, to be fair.
What, they're all single-use purchases.
They're all single-use purchases.
I mean, the thing is, you're sitting there going, it's hardly thinking out of the box, but actually, when you actually look at it, it's completely different from the game. Mm-hmm. It changes the game.
I think it's a smart move.
Very obvious seeming story, but it actually is kind of a really cool feature. And it's one of those things that Microsoft does these things that are a first, and a lot of the things that we see in Macs and in Android phones and all the devices, you see these really cool things. They're like, oh, look at my phone does. And they're like, yeah, but my phone did that like 4 years ago or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Microsoft does these really cool little things and then is really quiet about it. And then wonders why they can't keep the consumer market interested.
The thing is, there's people going, Microsoft have come out with the world's first. And Tim Cook's sitting there and Sergey's and is sitting there going, well, what's this then? And the person goes, they put a shopping cart in their store for apps. And they're all going, find me the person who didn't think of this, because they're going to have electrodes on their testicles by the end of the day. So obvious. Why did no one in development kill everyone in development? Because this is not this is a Fuhrer bunker overdub.
Yeah.
About why didn't we think of just putting a frigging shopping cart in app stores?
Yeah,
I'm sure the electrodes that Apple will use, those will have chamfered edges.
Yeah, absolutely. But there is a thing in my head that's going, okay, well, if no one's thought about doing this, there must have been a good reason why they got rid of it, because shopping carts are ubiquitous in stores. Is there a security loop to having multiple apps in a single basket that you need to...
No, there's no security loop, because it's all being done through the same secure payment structure. Right. It's not like you're going out and getting things from different places and jamming them in.
I'm trying to think of a reason why no one's done it. That's all that.
Well, it's kind of like thinking about like when Amazon first let you buy things, if they only let you buy one thing at a time, and then you were like, well, what I want to have four things shipped to me, or I want four things all at once. Let me get these. So Microsoft's also done a lot of tie-in between Xbox and Windows, where there's a lot of Play Anywhere games where you can play it on your Xbox or you can play it on your Windows machine. And so it gives you the ability, this is very much, I think, spearheaded by that, like I said, being able to buy game add-ons and all the parts for a game all at the same time, or else go in and see the deals that are on and buy two or three things, get it done, get the hell out. Microsoft's always been very focused on productivity, so what this does is it really helps to sort of broaden that, where they want you to get in, get the stuff done you want to do with your computer, and get the hell out and get on with whatever you're doing.
There is a good point here from Jufro Jim. He says maybe it's because the payments need to be directed to multiple devs, so single-use purchases is easier to manage from a cost viewpoint.
No, it's not. It's just it's lazy.
It's
easier to do single. When you do a store as a single transaction, from a programming perspective, because, you know, as a developer, I've built systems that are similar in construct to these things. And to build a single item payment structure is dead simple in comparison to a shopping cart, where you've got to be able to add and remove things from it, and you've got to do these different things. Where it's a single payment structure, it's just, did you buy it? You want it? Good. I process the payment. I give you the license. You're done. Whereas the shopping cart, it's like, did I add this? Did I remove this? And then they have to split up the payments. So there's more involved in doing this, which is probably why the sort of path of least resistance is what usually gets adopted first.
All right, I've come up with a hypothesis. And I'm sitting here thinking about this.
Drum roll.
I think that the reason we haven't seen shopping carts for app stores before now is because no one has created an app store with a really good user interface. The way they're all designed is you go in, you find discoverability is a problem too, but you go in, you find the app you want to buy, you buy it, and then you're at a dead end. So if you apply that to a shopping cart system, you go in, you select the thing that you want to buy, and now you have to back all the way out and then start over for the next thing and then back all the way out for that and then go on to the third one. And for something like that, it's probably just as easy for people to buy something and then make another purchase and then make another purchase. I'm not saying that's better, but I think the crappy interfaces have played a role in why it's been single purchase up to this point.
No, and I can totally agree with that. And the cool thing is about it is Microsoft just did it and then released it, and it's there. Like it's already on my machine. It's already probably on your machine. If you got a Windows machine, open up the store app, and you've got the little shopping cart button up at the top. Just showed up.
Yeah, there's questions in the chat room coming through about is it a download issue for Magic Man, but I think it goes back to what you just said, Adley. It's just lazy.
Yeah. Well, it's just lazy, and it's also when they originally started doing the stores, they were like, will this really work? And then it worked so well that they were frantically trying to keep up with it.
Mm.
And now they're, like I said, you're going to see with apps and with devices and things like this, you're going to see this is starting the evolution. We've hit the maturity phase of these app stores and everything else, and now they've got to get better because they suck. All of them do. Their searches suck. Their user interface sucks. The experience is usually pretty garbage. Microsoft's actually got a fairly decent store. They just need to work on, you know, convincing developers to come and play in it, right?
So Deep Pan's added in, are most app purchases more likely to be impulse purchases as you can never find what you're actually looking for? So, which is true. He's put a smiley on the end, but that is a true statement.
Oh, no. Yeah, it's totally a true statement. I mean, you go into any of the app stores and trying to find the thing that you actually want is can sometimes be a bit of a trial. But the interesting thing about the cart is now you can throw something into the cart as you go along the way. So it's basically turning the store into more of a Walmart than a convenience store where you go in and grab the one thing you need and get the hell out. Now you're kind of like, well, I'm going to go get this thing. Oh, wait a minute. That's over here. Let me grab that. And I think that they realized that they were missing a lot of that stuff, that developers were probably missing a lot of potential sales because people would see it and then they'd go back to find it again. And it'd be hard to find it or find the path that they got to ended up getting there. So this way you can throw things in the cart. I think that what you'll probably end up seeing is an evolution of this into being able to put things on your wish list like you can in Amazon and some of the other sites where you can say, hey, I don't necessarily want to buy this right now, but I want to put it aside so that I know it's there and I can come back and get it later. And I think that you're probably going to see that feature come in the future. It would be the next logical evolution of this concept.
There's a comment that read between the lines between Deep Pan's comment about impulse purchase and Jufro's comment about it, most of the stuff in app stores is crap. Is there a downturn in sales with a shopping cart because you look back at it and go, you know what, that wasn't the best idea 5 minutes ago? I've done that. I've looked at stuff and it's been like...
So have I, but also you've had times where you're going through and doing your app purchase and you get right to the end, you're like, and then you've put in the thing to say, make sure that you sign in before you make the purchase. And then you go, nah, I've then gone, you know, I'm not going to buy it right now. I'll do something else. And so, there's always that possibility. But I think that that possibility be outweighed by the number of developers that will actually pick up additional sales because people will be able to toss that in as they're going and looking for the thing they were actually looking for originally.
Okay. Yeah, fair point. I got to say, positive move. Well done, Microsoft. I don't see a negative in that. And it is an obvious thing that should have been done from the start. Why not?
Yep.
you get charged that way as well, because if I buy three apps on the bounce and two films, I get a single bill from Apple that says you bought three apps and two films. Is the total.
Mm-hmm.
They are tallying it up somewhere along the line.
Yeah, definitely.
Jeff, you've had a bit of a cribbage about a bit of a complaint about Tweetbot features no longer working in preparation for the Twitter API change.
Yeah, and my complaint isn't targeting Tweetbot specifically. It's really Twitter, because today, August 16th, this is the day that that Twitter is shutting down some of the APIs that third-party client app developers have been relying on for years, and so it kills core functionality, at least for some users. So as of now, we can't get a live stream of tweets coming into a client app and push notifications for pretty much everything that people want them for is gone. Mm-hmm. And so third-party Twitter clients became less useful today. And I have a problem with this, first because it would be really nice to have those features, but also because I don't think Twitter is making interfaces themselves that are on the same quality as we're seeing from third-party clients. So Twitter is trying to push us into using inferior products to access their service.
And they've done this before, too. They did this a while back when they were realizing that all of the third-party developers were eating their lunch when it came to downloads, because their original apps on all the platforms really kind of sucked because the UI was garbage. And mm-hmm. what they ended up doing is that was when they put the limits on. They put the brakes on how many calls you could make for a single license key for a developer. And that created a whole big thing for Doge. Because I was originally at that time putting out my own Twitter app, and I just scrapped it after they started that garbage. When I saw them start to play around with API rules after the fact, I basically gave up on Twitter at that point as far as a development tool. And I know a lot of other developers did too. And it ends up being mm-hmm. a big issue. And now they're playing that game again. Now that they're PWAs, I'm not going to say anything bad about PWAs in general, because PWAs are a great idea for a lot of markets and a lot of things. But Twitter's PWA is not what I would call the hallmark of what you would expect from a company that has the user base and the use base that it does. You would expect something much more powerful and much better.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I think you're being far too generous, actually.
What is the PWA? I have no idea.
Well, yeah, no, they're all of their apps on all the platforms except for Apple's are PWAs. And it's only because Apple doesn't support PWA.
I don't know what PWA is. I mean, what is it?
It's a progressive web app. So basically what it is...
That would be the thing you claimed to be able to make about 6 weeks ago, Greeny.
I know. Well, I never heard it called a PWA before.
On the Mac show, you said, I can make progressive web apps.
And I have made one. It's shit, but I made one. Okay. It's the new thing, isn't it? Everybody's doing this. But I never called it a PWA. It could stand for anything, couldn't it? Plastic.
No, don't, because Willie. Don't, because Willie's the second word. Don't do it.
No, well, I was going to say atmosphere, plastic world atmosphere.
Thanks, man. Brilliant. Thank God for that. I'm breathing a sigh of relief.
Yeah. So you could live on the moon in a PWA, couldn't you, or something like that? I don't know.
Mr. Campion has joined us, fresh from his flight back from York.
Near enough. At least, how long you think so?
At least you won't have rubbed off much of your tyre then on the way back. The speed you were going.
Now we got turned up in a bit of traffic as we came out of York, and then took longer than we thought.
Did you have a nice beer with Mr. Culture last night?
Yeah, beer was lovely with Mark last night. Beer, pizzas, and then tonight over for the Unico launch.
Awesome, mate. We'll talk to you about that when we get to the sponsor region. You've got your picture and everything. Stay fresh. Just a thought, though. If Twitter's doing this, I mean, there's a question from Casey Newton in the story that says, "Damn, this basically is the end of Tweetbot and all of the third-party apps." And everyone said exactly the same thing when they did the restriction on calls, but it never was. And is there a danger that if they really did get rid of all third-party apps, wouldn't the European Union intervene and go, "Whoa, hang on, you know, you've got too much here to not have other people accessing the and coming up with
the European
cool
would
stuff"?
Totally go in, but they'll wait a year or two until all those companies that were depending on using the APIs were completely dead.
Yeah.
And then they would come in and go, "No, fair we point. Want a few billion dollars in fines.
And open up your APIs again, please.
And open your APIs up again, please." But the thing is, the damage is done. I mean, it's great to say that these government bodies were making, you know, are coming in and fining these companies for non-compete, but it always ends up being at the cost of the at the cost of the upstarts that are willing to disrupt the industry and the ones that are willing to change the industry. And it always happens too late and too slowly. And what ends up happening is you have whole technologies die on the leaf when they could have been fantastic. They could have been great. And there could have been competition that would have done nothing more than to drive both innovation and to give the users more choice.
Yeah, I mean, Jim's put a thing in, is this a charge for premium API access? And Jeff, you've just retorted that. Go ahead.
Yeah, so what it costs is almost $12 per user for that premium access. Jeez. So yeah, so if you want to keep these features in your app that as of today are dead, mm-hmm. well, yeah, $12 per user, it's cost prohibitive. So really what Twitter's done is they've taken these things that have been part of the Twitter experience and third-party clients for years and turned it into a premium thing that to me seems like it's more targeted at companies that are mining Twitter for information.
And so, and that's the thing that really bugs me about this is the fact that Twitter became Twitter because of these APIs, because
yes.
of the things that they did to make them a useful tool for everybody. And they got to where they are because of that. Now that they've got this level where they're like, okay, well, now what we're going to do is we're going to yank this out and we're going to do this. And we're going to just worry about this bottom line for this particular group because we can hose these people considerably for money because they have got the funds to give instead of making it a reasonable platform for everybody. Now, can I understand that they have to make money and they have to figure it out? I know Twitter's had a really hard time trying to figure out how they're going to make money from their platform, but I don't see this as being the right way to do that.
No.
Yeah. And I'm thinking a lot of this has to do with showing inline ads, which you really don't see in third-party apps. So what they could have done is left all these APIs in place because tons of people are using these apps and then just change the way their system works so it injects those ads into
the API calls. Exactly. They could have totally done that and still harvested the money that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, there are ways around this. There were ways to think about it and to do it. I mean, it's...
But now they're pushing, trying to push people into a crappy web interface or crappy apps that are just wrappers around a web interface.
Well, the big thing is Twitter's never been good at interfaces. UI has never been Twitter's strong point.
And a half.
Yeah. Well, when you look at what Twitter was in the beginning, there was no need to think about interface because you were just creating text messages, literally just SMS on your phone.
Yeah,
you could have had a green screen with a green flashing prompt and played war games on it.
Yeah. And actually, that would have been even more sophisticated than what we had because it's basically like a couple lines of you know, on a flip phone or candy bar phone screen, and a 9-key thing for the alphabet.
The thing that I like about I want to say hello to Betsy. Hello, Betsy. Welcome back to the chat room. Betsy's in here. Betsy Weber is the lady who actually put us in touch with Atli and talked about us doing a Microsoft show. And now it's actually happening, Betsy. Thank you very much for doing that. No, time for a Twitter replacement, says Deepan. But I was talking to a girl today and she said, "Oh, I don't do Twitter anymore. It's too political." And I said, "Actually, if you get happy with the mute button, Twitter's actually now coming. If you block all the political tweets then it's kind of coming back a little bit to the geeks a lot more than it used to be. But the politics is still there, and the politics is still ruling. But if you use your mutes properly and get rid of everything that's politic-based, it feels a lot better than it used to, most definitely. It's a lot closer back to where it was when, you know, there was only 17 million of us, as opposed to 17 billion.
Or you just be proactive on who you follow and who you don't follow.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. you harvest people just like I do on any really social hard. Media. I make sure that I'm only following people that are, you know, that are not creating noise that I don't necessarily need to see or hear. I don't mind different opinions.
You say that, but...
And I don't mind, you know, new ideas, but I don't want to hear, I don't want to listen to anybody's political opinion, whether they agree to me or with me or not. I don't care.
But I think that's where it's become very hard, and that's where Mute has really come into its own, Atlee, is that there are so many people who follow BTN who I follow back. And I've always said this, whoever wants a conversation on Twitter, I'll follow you back. If you just write to me and go, you're an arsehole, you're not getting a follow back. And if you follow me, don't expect me to automatically follow you back. But if you write to me and you have a conversation with me, I will instantly follow you back because I want a conversation on Twitter. Exactly. But there are a lot of people who I do enjoy severe conversations with whose politics I fundamentally loathe, but they're not bad people. That's where the mute function is really being positive.
I will not talk politics with them because I have we will never come to the agreement on our political viewpoints, but technology, all sorts of other subjects, great. I will have long conversations with them, have no problem.
And that's what I'm saying. Mute has been absolutely beneficial in those circumstances. And
that's awesome.
To lose that as an API would be criminal. It would be criminal to other apps. Good story, mate. Really good story. Really good story.
I just looked at my Twitter profile, and I've been a member of Twitter now for 11 years. Isn't that amazing?
What's your number?
Where do I find that?
See, that's the beauty. If you go on Tweetbot and you click on your name, it tells you at the very bottom what Twitter user number you are.
Well, let me look.
And I don't talk to anyone who's over a billion. I'm over a billion. Will you follow me back? No, bollocks.
So, okay, I'm in TweetDeck. Where do we find this then?
Well, that's because it's not Tweetbot, which is the one I told you gave your Twitter number, really. So.
Well, I haven't got Tweetbot, have I?
Saying is if you want to know your number, Tweetbot tells you. When you pick up your profile page, it tells you at the bottom what your Twitter user number is.
Okay, well, accounts.
I'm 17,347,137. So I'm pretty much near the start.
That's really funny. It's kind of like you saying, hey, try this apple. It's really sweet. And he comes back with, I'm eating this fish and it's not very sweet at all.
So it's my Twitter user number.
So Jeff Gamet's Twitter user number is 9828542. So he's way before me. You're about a week before me.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Like maybe a week before you.
Mullerbike says he's number one. No, you aren't. I think the lowest I've heard is Tom Merritt. I think Tom Merritt's in the 4 million. I don't know anybody personally who's lower than that.
So you and what month did you, month and year did you join Twitter?
I have no clue. I just know that Tweetbot tells me my number is 17 million, whatever it was.
But when you scroll down to where the number is right below that, it tells you the month and year.
Oh, as well. November 2008. Yeah. So 10 years. So Greeny, you've got to be way before that then, if you've been 11 years.
Well, I am 542-8352, whatever that is.
Wow. Impressive. That is impressive. So that's pretty cool, mate. Anyone who's under 10 million is royalty.
Hey, I'm royalty. Awesome.
Bob Beach got July, so he's newer than me, 2008.
Oh, I'm October 2007.
You're not. Oh, you're 7, 2007, that's right. Yeah.
2007.
Cool. Jim's October 2009, that's what threw me. So you can look up your number, mate. February 2008 for Muller. And Muller's lower than me. That's surprising.
You can find your Twitter ID here online if you don't have the app.
MyTwitterID.com.
Hmm.
Batwing, she's 261,314,949. You're dead to me, guys. I'm not talking to
you. I'm 98 million. Sorry, guys.
98 million? Shame on you.
I know.
Well, at least you're below a billion. Anyone below a billion I talk to, anyone over a billion.
This is my second idea, though. I started one for a while and didn't do much with it.
Oh, no, no, stop it. Someone's just dropped the mic, man. Someone's just
dropped the mic. Oh, my God. Look at Betsy's number.
We are in the presence of true royalty. We have Betsy Webber with 766,347. Betsy, I have never heard of anyone or met anyone with less than a million.
That's impressive.
Stop typing, everyone. Stop typing. You're pointless.
You're done. You're done. It's over.
Betsy
it's
has over. Dropped the mic and walked away.
14 million is not that bad.
But yeah, after seeing Betsy's number, I might as well Twitter account and go home.
Exactly. I just want to correct you there, Ian. 14 million's not bad. When you're in the presence of someone with someone below a million. A
million, yes.
I'm sorry. It's utter shit. Betsy Webber,
he's in the first three quarter million people almost.
As you just put hashtag nerd alert. No shit, girl, that is serious nerdism. Show me
that's impressive.
Show me your nerd number. Title. Good story, mate. Good story. That's half the show. Greeny and Campion, have you got a story for us?
Give us a tick.
Campion's is new. Is unique.
No, it's not.
Betsy had at B as a username. You had at B. Do you remember that guy that got his Twitter name stolen because it was at NG?
Yeah, there was at Matt as well. Got his stolen.
Yeah. Holy.
That's amazing.
Betsy, mate, you've stolen the show, mate. You've turned up 10 minutes in the chat room and that's it. There's no point in carrying on any further.
Yeah, Betsy just stoned all of us.
Don't come here again, eh? Camps, Google is working on native hearing aid support for Android release.
Yeah, so Google announced a partnership this week with a hearing aids manufacturer, and they're going to develop an audio standard for hearing aids that will essentially turn hearing aids into a Bluetooth device and work with Android using that standard to allow hearing aid wearers, people with hearing aid dependencies, to hear their phones. I just think this is brilliant from an accessibility point of view.
Yeah.
And when I were kind of reading the story earlier today, it kind of made me think, why has nobody done this so much earlier? Well,
that's my first question, is what's the T-loop all about then if it's not Bluetooth? Is it radio?
I think it is radio. I don't really understand much about T-loop, but I think that is radio, yes.
Right, I'll Google what is T-loop. And I'll have something that's got something to do with Yorkshire or Tetley. when we get back, but so this is the again simplest of ideas by some distance, Camps.
Absolutely. Time and time again as I've been reading it, why has it taken so long for this to happen when we've got so many of the huge tech companies talking about accessibility, and visual aids have come on significantly, and the hearing aids technology is already there. It's just a case of developing the standard, getting it in the software and being able to use it. So I'm kind of thinking, I know we've talked in the past about things like the Aftershocks headphones, the bone conduction headphones, and how because of the way that conducts sound waves through the cheekbones, that has major benefits to people with hearing problems. However, this, I think, is a bit next level. If people are already hearing aid dependent, that they're already wearing, they're already buying them. This, for me, is something. I mean, I think what's going to be interesting is if this becomes a really open standard, and therefore other mobile phone and I suppose audio device manufacturers jump on the back of it, or whether this will be a little bit more closed. You know, would Apple adopt anything like this? Would any of the other manufacturers be able to jump on top?
Is Bluetooth an electromagnetic field? Got to be.
Yeah, it's a radio signal.
Yeah, so it's got to be.
Yeah.
This is just the frequency that works.
So the way hearing aids currently work, and I am most definitely not doing this off the top of my head, it's a T-coil, which is added into the hearing aid, which stands for telecoil, and the telecoil converts an electromagnetic field signal, which is sent out around the user. So that's only Bluetooth. It's just a different frequency, presumably, that before Bluetooth ranges were offered up.
Now, Apple's hearing aid support, because you mentioned, hey, maybe Apple would do something like this. If your hearing aid supports Bluetooth, the native support that Apple has for the iPhone is crazy. I mean, they have gone so deep into hooking into the hearing aid thing that a lot of these companies that are making hearing aids now will actually design them so they will use your iPhone to on the fly build profiles so that you hear best in any given situation. So with the stuff Apple's doing and then the stuff that Google's now doing, I think this is going to be fantastic for people that use hearing aids.
So hang on, because I've just got to another article. Hearing aid mode is designed for hearing aids that have a standard telecoil. So the iPhone uses off a standard telecoil. To activate it for hearing aid mode, you go to iPhone, Settings, General, Accessibility, and choose Hearing Aid in the Hearing section, and your standard T-coil will work with it.
That's cool.
That's even more than I thought it was doing. So, all right.
That is cool. Well done, Apple.
So where's the bit difference? Where's the benefit in terms of what Google are looking at here in terms of a specific standard working with manufacturers of hearing aids compared to what Apple's doing, which sounds like the majority of hearing aids will already have the technology built in anyway?
Well, I think all the difference is that Google understand the power of press release, whereas Apple clearly don't.
Yeah, it's just so that when now the deaf person goes into Primark, the phone can pop up and go, hello, you're in Primark, would you like to tell someone about it? Sorry, that was a call about something earlier, Chris.
The best jokes are the ones that reference previous conversations without a doubt on shows.
No lost question. On that one, sorry.
Well, you weren't here, mate, you were stuck on the A64, but basically Ian was promoting his frustration of the Android system whereby if you walk past you couldn't turn it off if you walk past Primark, it says, do you know you buy Primark, do you want to tell everyone about it? No, I freaking don't, it's Primark. But yeah, no, Apple's been doing this for a while. There isn't a story, is there?
No, on that basis, no, there isn't, because it's been done.
I don't mean to be negative, but
no, you're right. I didn't realise that Apple had taken it almost a step further using the existing technology and therefore no redevelopment required, because Apple have already done it.
Ewan, I think you hit on the real story here. Apple totally failed with publicity on this, and Google is exploiting it.
Yeah. I need to test with my parents and say, can you hear me iPhone now? And get some music on it or something like that, because I need to test, because they definitely got standard T-coils.
Yeah, as has my dad, but I've never bothered to actually check and make sure that his hearing aids are essentially paired with his iPhone. That's something I'll be doing this weekend.
Well, it's not pairing by the looks of it. It's just gathering the signal.
Or
it's
and enabling it, I suppose, in iPhone settings.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so here's the big fail that I know of in Apple's hearing aid support. Once you've done the pairing, I mean, your hearing aids become your speakers for your iPhone as well. So if you do find my iPhone, say from your Apple Watch, so it pings, so you know where it is, it pings in the hearing aid, which is completely worthless. The phone needs to ping.
Well, they'll fix that after they fix their store.
Yeah, so yeah, maybe that's an iOS 12 thing.
Yeah. So I've gone in. Ewan, you mentioned earlier, so I've gone into accessibility on my iPhone, and within accessibility, there is MFI hearing devices.
Yeah.
So there's hearing aid compatibility improves audio quality with some hearing aids.
It says go to settings, general, accessibilities, and choose hearing aid in the hearing section.
Yeah, so on mine, I have got MFI hearing devices, and within there, it's searching. It says pair made for iPhone hearing device, hearing aids, and sound processors. Other hearing aids are paired in Bluetooth settings. If I come back to accessibility, right, there is so a hearing aid compatibility switch. And under that, the description says hearing aid compatibility improves audio quality with some hearing aids. I suppose what it doesn't on the iPhone specify how you can identify if your hearing aid is compatible or not. So that's something I'll need to look up in terms of, what my dad uses.
Yeah, but the way I've just understood that, Camps, is if you've got a standard hearing aid, it'll work. If you've got a Bluetooth hearing aid, it'll be different, but it'll work better.
I hope that's the case, yeah.
Right, so your mission this week is to report this back next week, mate.
Yep, absolutely. And then I'll be able to describe how much of a story, if anything, this is or was.
And if we've got any hearing impaired people out there who know about this already, feel free to send us an email.
Well, they wouldn't have heard of it, about it, would they?
Awesome. Greeny, you have saved yourself until last.
I put my story in three times, and you keep ignoring it.
Well, mate, do you know
what I want to know is, how do I get the wine out of it this week?
Are you in the chat room by yourself? Because I'm scrolling up and I can't see it, mate. And
yeah, I was the second story in tonight.
Fine, I think.
Greeny, do you know how fast this chat room goes by when you're trying to run Wirecast and do everything else?
I'm not saying anything. All I'm saying is I'm not going to accept blame for putting a story in.
I sincerely apologise for missing your story from the register.
Yes, thank you very much.
I cannot.
So do I get a nice Christmas present or something?
Mate, you're going to get a great Christmas present anyway, so don't worry about it.
Okay. Right. My one is rather boring.
After all that.
I know, it's really dull. If I was a listener, I'd probably tune out. Actually, I wouldn't tune out now. Wait till you hear the adverts and then tune out. Okay. So Arm, which was developed by a British company called Acorn, and has sort of, it's a processor that has sort of powered the iPhone pretty much from the very beginning, I think. Has released a CPU roadmap for the first time. This is the most boring story I've ever known.
Well, it is and it isn't, because it looks like Arm is not interested in anything other than the 5G network now.
Okay.
So I think that's quite critical, because it looks like, Arm has always been synonymous with mobile device, absolutely, and low-powered device. Absolutely. But this story just says effectively, if 5G comes along, we're quids in. If 5G doesn't come along soon, we're all screwed. That's the way I'm reading it. They are chucking all their eggs in one basket.
Well, 5G is the way to go, isn't it?
Well,
Verizon is doing a 5G rollout test thing that goes beyond just our regular phone thing. So that they've picked, like, I think 6 cities in the United States, and they're taking the 5G thing to homes. So instead of having a DSL or cable modem or whatever, you get this 5G receiver with an antenna that goes on your house, and that becomes your broadband. So what I'm looking at now for the future of 5G goes way beyond just our phones. And it could be that Arm is looking at that as well. Because if we could get what Verizon is advertising, gigabit speeds without wires right into our homes, right, that's really impressive.
So they're talking about the current Arm chips are going to end up, or the projected Arm chips are going to be 3 gigahertz, 3.5 gigahertz in turbo mode, Core i5 equivalent, whilst exhibiting a third less power consumption.
That's good, insane. Isn't it?
That's awesome.
That is great.
That sounds like something you want in a laptop right there.
Less than 5 watts of power compared to 15 watts. Yeah, but it's a small, low-powered in inverted commas low powered for a Core i5, isn't it?
Yes.
So you're at notebook there rather than full laptop.
Yeah, or a tablet.
They're designed and to some extent manufactured in Cambridge in the UK. And as I say, Apple and ARM have worked very closely together. And as I understand it, the Apple are working on their own processors, but they're going to be based on ARM. That's what I've read.
Yeah, the new Apple. The Apple's projected.
Yeah, Apple's always working on new ARM processors.
And is it Windows as well? Apparently going to be ARM compatible soon too.
Makes sense.
Yeah, well, they've already released released an ARM powered tablet, but it's not performing as well as I guess a lot of people would like. The battery life is insane, but
I know there's always been talk about ARM. About them reaching out to do ARM-based things rather than the Intel Core tablets, I've said. So that'll be interesting if they get it together.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Intel's in a lot of trouble because ARM's quickly pulling up alongside it and will pass it, I think, fairly soon if Intel doesn't get things sorted out. I mean, I think that the new Go has got the new Pentium Gold processor, which is supposed to be a little bit more power-saving. And the Go does have a tiny battery. It's still only getting, it says it gets 9 hours of battery, but I haven't had one to play with for a full amount of time. But a couple of people I know and trust have told me that they're getting around 4 or 5 hours of normal use out of it. And for a tablet in this day and age, that's a little light.
It is a bit, but that's not good
enough. And that's on Intel. Now, if it was ARM... Yeah. It would be lower performance right now, but it would be the same battery would probably more than triple that time. So I think Intel's got a lot of work to catch up on.
Apple are rather upset with Intel, aren't they? They're pretty much dropping them, I think.
Well, I would imagine the biggest issue
at least not for
something to do with the i9s, right?
I think because they screwed around waiting for Kaby Lake, didn't they? I think that just pissed off the market wholesale. There wasn't a single PC provider who was waiting for Kaby Lake who wasn't upset.
Yeah, yeah. And then with the Spectre issue that's going on, and now they've got to release new processors that don't have this particular weakness. But I'm not sure whether we're going to see if they're going to have the same performance increases that they've been traditionally doing with their new processors. For me, I was excited about the i9 until I saw that, you know, the pure heat that it puts out is just ridiculous.
So a lot of it all over again, isn't it? I mean, you get something powerfully performing. Classically, always AMD's CPUs always ran hotter.
Yeah, that's true.
And you've now got the situation, as I see it mostly, is performance hasn't really changed much since third generation i-series CPUs. The old laptop I'm sat here at the moment podcasting on is a third generation i5, and the only thing really I'd gain advantage by a newer model is it'd be thinner and have a better battery life. Performance-wise, it's much of a muchness, which is a real thing that's a disappointment now. I was looking forward to really thumpingly fast CPUs, but we seem to fit a point at 4 gig, and that's about as fast as we can go.
Pretty much. It seems, to me at least, as an idiot, it's trying, sort of historically, it was always Intel, and then AMD, and then AMD, I think, overtook Intel, and ARM was this sort of sleeping thing that has suddenly, slowly and powerfully, become market leader.
ARM just sits in the background and powers all the mobile phones.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what it does. Which obviously the first tier mobile phones will run on ARM CPUs.
Well, they're going to be, they'll soon be powering laptops as well, aren't they? Windows and...
I'm actively looking forward to that. I think that'll be an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Hopefully Windows, but...
No.
Well, for big grown-up stuff when I'm working, I need Windows.
I mean, the process is
for my own
critical,
uses, that's fine. I've got a Mac. That's great. But... I'm doing grown-up stuff for work. It has to be a Windows machine.
The Deepan's put a thing in here that says when 5G comes out, it's game over for cable and wired providers, and there'll be no more home routers infected, presumably with Russian military malware. Allegedly. But the thing is, it's how long it takes for 5G to come to market. They finished the auction, and they've, because do you remember the 3G auction? They closed bidding and they played way, way more than expectation. And then when the 4G spectrum came up, they were they'd all got together in a little consortium, and the government got like a tenth of what they expected, because they'd all fixed the prices. Whereas now this one, they've gone back to like 1.4 billion of costs for the 50 to 30 megahertz spectrum. But I just, bringing it to market is the key. And if they can't bring it to the market and they can't get ARM chips in, ARM chips have, they're banking on people saying, well, like one third power consumption, we have to go with ARM. Whereas if people don't, and there's a backender done, and people go with Samsung or they go with another chip provider, ARM's bust at this point. That's what I'm saying. They've rolled the dice in one direction, and if it goes wrong, it's going to go wrong very big.
Well, if it goes wrong maybe Apple will buy them.
You reckon? But what would they've got to sell then? It's a dollar sale, isn't it?
Yeah, Apple would be buying technology and talent, and then they would just roll it into what they're doing for their own custom processors.
Yeah,
they would also buy their procurement chain.
Oh yeah.
That's an incredible value right there, is just the ability to build the chips en masse.
Yeah, but I just think when you get to the stage where you make a decision like this, you instantly put a ticking clock on it, because that investment has to turn off in time, otherwise you're sunk. And if you're only going in one direction, there's no hedging, there's no offset, there's no secondary costs that can be absolved by supply chain and that kind of stuff. You are absolutely all in one boat, and if the boat's leaking, you're stuffed. That bothers
you.
Maybe a little bit, yeah.
I'd like to disagree with that point, because my story is about ARM chips, fair enough, but it's more about, in some ways, that they're sort of laying out their roadmap, so sort of what they're working on now is not going away, but they're just trying to talk about the future, and they think that 5G, excuse me, is going to be the future. So,
I would agree with you if I knew that procurement was solely based on the merits of innovation, and it's not. It's based on a lot more factors, and it's probably more based on price. And if they're at one third less, they're expecting a higher investment from people who are going to use the chips. And if they can get a suitable chip at a third of the price, let alone a third of the power consumption, they will be the one that the procurement teams will get for cell providers, not ARM. And ARM at that point are up Pooh Creek and using their hands. They've got nowhere else to go. That bothers me.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the most popular or widely selling processor in the market, in the world, they've worked hard to get to that point, and they were Acorn eventually.
I haven't disagreed with you once yet on what you've just said there. My point is, procurement is not based on innovation. Procurement is based on price, and if they've got one that's one third the power consumption, if it's twice the price, they're still going to go bust.
Nope, they're not going to go
bust. All right, here's another problem for them, and it's, where will 5G end up? Because you have physical limitations. 5G does not go through objects very well at all. So what I think is going to happen is we will get like densely populated urban areas where you get microcell repeaters for 5G that are all around. And when you get outside of those areas, then you won't have that 5G support, because there won't be enough people to support the infrastructure or the cost of the infrastructure. So 5G is going to be kind of a patchwork thing. And I think that could, to a degree, hamper adoption.
It certainly will be in the States. Might not be so much in the UK, where we've got much smaller area to cover.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, my expectation is that when 5G is really rolling out in the United States, that it will be in the big metropolitan areas, but there's so much open space in the United States. Like you get west of the Mississippi and then through the Rocky Mountains and all the way out to California, there's so much empty space and there won't be 5G there.
Is it still CDMA hanging about?
Yeah.
CDMA, yeah, it's still around.
Jeez. I suppose it's the only thing that works in... I think Carrie Holtzman was one that was explaining it to me. It's the only thing that works in some of the more remote locations.
For some people, it's the fastest thing they've got outside a carrier pigeon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was Carrie Holtzman when I was on work session before, when I was another one of our podcasts long ago. Carrie Holtzman was saying, oh, yeah, you can't. It's just what works.
Yeah.
This podcast, well, it's also infrastructure that needs to be built, right? There's CDMA infrastructure that's built in certain places. And until there is... financial reason to change the towers and to change the technology over, some places just aren't going to do it.
Mm.
The same thing for 5G. I mean, it's great to upgrade all of your towers and upgrade all your infrastructure for 5G, but I mean, outside of major metropolitan areas, which will get it much more quickly than a lot of the outlying places, I mean, you're going to see CDMA, you're going to see 3G, 4G. That's going to be around for quite a while.
Ewan, tell me about this podcast.
Thanks, mate. I just wanted to say, good story in the end, Grinny. I've had there's a few stories I've gone in tonight. I'm like, oh, shit, this is going to be a bit of a tough discussion. They turn out to be cracking discussions. So well done, everyone. This podcast and all these is brought to you by TSO Host. They are the people that we are grateful for. We've got this final, one of the servers went off this week, and I made a cock up. And the wrong server went off. So it all disappeared. And so I had to pay an extra month because we still haven't finished moving it all over. So as of next week, we'll start to, everything will be over on TSO Host and we'll be lock, stock and barrel with them. They've been great. They've stepped in. They're absolutely wonderful. Cannot thank them enough. We would be lost without server sponsorship. Simple as that. You know, if you value us, you have to say to TSO Host, thank you so much for looking after us. If you want to buy service from them, great. We'd love you to do that and make sure you mention us as well. There is offer codes coming, but typically their domain prices are about half the price anyway. So you will get a good deal regardless right now if you think about moving stuff over. But please make sure that you thank our sponsors. If we don't have a server host, we stop broadcasting. Simple as that. That's not for you to plan to stop everything and cause us to go offline, please. But please, please, please make sure you support our sponsors. Give them some kudos because we really would be stuffed. And also thank you to Wirecast, the people. Oh, what's going on?
How timely is that?
Is everyone there? Yeah. This is where Wirecast just balls the pieces. And it's because... No, I just want to point
thank
out...
Thank you to Wirecast for crashing.
No, I just want to point out, it's got absolutely nothing to do with Wirecast. Actually, it's my Mac, the Mac that does all the screens that passes them through has just restarted. And it's managed to close all of the... so it's invoked the, if you like, the screensaver on all the little tiny Mac minis. So that's why you're seeing all the login screens here, rather than the people. Just bear with me a second while I can edit, don't worry.
But you are.
That's awesome.
This is great TV. You got
to oh, yes.
Watching me type my passwords and think, oh, right, I know how many characters it is now. What can I do?
Atlee's back.
Atlee's back. Count them all in. Five. Four.
Wrong password.
Oh, is that wrong password?
It wiggled, but it didn't log me in, so I can see the screen, but I'm not there.
I'm glad
he's not there.
I'm glad. Oh, piss off! It's not the wrong password.
It says it is.
Oh, there we go. There's Camps. There we go. There we go. We're rattling now. Grainy, you're sorry, mate, but you're the last one back.
Hey! Oh, good evening!
The risks and rewards of live streaming. That's awesome. That's awesome, Batwinch. That's fantastic.
Oh, come on. I'm tired. I've tossed typed this friggy password 10 times now, and I've got it wrong, allegedly, for at least half of them. And last, but by no means least, Greeny Boy is back in the room. There we go.
That's awesome.
So I just want to point out during the Wirecast read, that was not Wirecast, okay? Wirecast was broadcasting the TSO host screen perfectly. That was my Mac had decided it wanted to reboot for some apparent reason. And it had caused a flake out on all of these. They give us Wirecast. That lets us do all of this switching with all of these boys from across the world via Macs, using the VNC in, using a great program called Desktop Presenter, which lets them all come in and show up on here as well. Lets me switch backwards and forwards from external computers that show web pages to screens here in the studio that show webcams and all the window lickers on the other side of the bench when it happens. Please support them as well at telestream.net. If you don't want Wirecast, I totally get that. That's up to you. £1,000 piece of software, it might not be the sort of stuff that you do if you haven't got a sports or worship or something like that. But yeah, you would be able to have a look at ScreenFlow 10, and SteamFlow 10 is unbelievable at the moment. Mm-hmm. It's really, really good. So go and check the demo of that out, and then say thank you to at Telestream for supporting. And last but by no means least, Campion, my boy, you went to... Oh, it's got rid of the sodding picture. Bastard, that's my Mac again. I put a program on to get rid of all my screen caps, and it just lifts them when it feels like it and just automatically puts them in Images, which is a folder on my desktop, to keep my desktop clean. But the problem is, once I've imported it into Wirecast, if it doesn't come back, then it just disappears, and I'll give over. Right, there it is. There's Campion's mug on a Uniku screen, mate. Tell us about your experience
there. Oh, how cool is Uniku?
I did tell you.
Yeah. He did. So, I went over to meet Mark this afternoon at Vision Care Optometry over in York, not far from Ian, and they did the scan of my face. It, as you can see on the screen there, it creates a 3D image of my face.
And you can rotate that in real time, can't you?
Oh yeah, rotate real time. It's really weird when it gets obviously around the back and you can't see it. And it's like some sort of mask almost. It's crazy how accurate it all is. And I chose some frames that I liked. Mark was then able to essentially put the frames on my face so I could see exactly what they're like. Obviously, it renders and maps to the shape, the size of my face, the width of the bridge of my nose, how far my eyes, my pupils are apart, the dimensions of the side of my head, and how the arms of the glasses, how long the arms of the glasses need to be to loop around the back of my ears. So, as you've said before, so they are absolutely bespoke fitted to me. Amazing, absolutely amazing. So,
have you bought some?
There are some coming. Yeah, some blue frame that I went for. It's the style that are on that image, but with the blue.
Stop trying to pad it out, mate. Have you told Angela you bought them?
She was there.
Oh, she got some as well then.
No, Angela don't wear glasses. So talking to Mark, three design collections now. So there's
cool.
12 different frame types from the design collections. So 36. There are also some two more collections coming, hopefully with titanium sides, not printed obviously, and looking at some cool technology around laser cut acetate as well.
Oh, okay.
So really cool, looking forward to seeing them.
Of course, if you've got laser cut acetate, all the technology that builds the frame is still there for the laser cut.
Yeah,
it's only CAD. Absolutely. Only CAD data, yeah, brilliant.
Yes. Great idea. Yeah. Really, really cool. So that's my cool thing as well. We'll bundle it all together. But I know you'd said it, but I think if anybody's in the market for glasses, then I think there's two Uniqlo sites in the UK now. One in Northampton, and then there's one in York. I think they're the only two currently.
Oh, is it that? So them are the only ones?
Believe
so. I went down for an eye test with them. They are a really good optician.
Yes. Real lovely people in there as well. Yeah, really looked after us. Good. Yeah, definitely take a look. I'll be writing a review up and getting it all online as soon as they've arrived, both in terms of the experience and the glasses.
This is the beauty of Uniqlo, because they are unique to you. Everyone can write their own review.
Yeah, absolutely.
My review doesn't apply to you.
Yeah, there were other people in there as well. Whilst after I'd had my images taken, there was a lady straight in, and she had the same done.
Excellent, mate. Lining them up. Good stuff. Jeffrey, what is your cool thing?
My cool thing is an app from Adobe, Adobe Rush. So Adobe Rush, it's in beta right now, but it's a public beta. So you can go to Adobe's website and sign up. This is a cross-platform video editing app that's designed to be easy to use, and it's pretty slick. I've been playing with a beta on my Mac and recently got into the iOS beta as well. And typically when I'm out and about doing video stuff, say at a conference, I'll record a video and then do the editing in iMovie on my iPhone and publish it from there. And now that I'm playing with Adobe Rush, Apple's going to have to step up their game, because I'd rather use Adobe Rush now. So it's still in beta testing, so some things are kind of in flux. Occasionally stuff isn't working right. And I'm not sure exactly when they're planning on doing the official public release, but, I mean, you can get into it now and start playing with it, and it's pretty cool.
They released about a year ago, maybe a bit more, a jump cut smoother. So you know when you do jump cuts where you say something and you've stuttered, you can cut the sections out where you've stuttered and put it all together, and it creates this video that just jumps from one to the other. And then what the Adobe software does is it creates that as smooth speech text and imagery, so there's no jumps. I'm just wondering whether they've got that in this as well, because if they have got that in this, then that could be the... that could be the seal of the deal for me.
I haven't played with that, so I don't know.
Jump cut smoothing. It was definitely in the last one. So great pick, mate. Price? Was it just a
I don't think Adobe's announced a price yet. So I don't know if it's going to be just part of Creative Cloud, but I'm assuming that we'll be able to get it separate from that. So, yeah, I don't know what pricing's going to be.
Awesome. Love that. Can we jump to Greeny, because he's got to go just before 10, because he's up at 5 working.
I did find a good one. You know, I work quite closely with Google, and it looks like the Google Chromebook will be available to dual-boot into Windows 10 or whatever version of Windows.
Say OS 10 then.
Windows 10, I'm not a massive fan of Windows, and if I'm truthful, I'm not a massive fan of Chromebook, but I just thought it was interesting to point out that if you're looking for a sort of a cheaper laptop, then the next Chromebook, mind you, they're still very expensive. I think a Pixelbook is about $1,000, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, they're not cheap.
Yeah,
you can get cheap versions, can't you? You can get 14-inch ones for $299 and stuff like that.
Yeah,
they're pretty limited.
Yeah, but it's just like buying the netbooks, right? They're gonna be lower spec. They're gonna, you know, there's at $299, you're gonna there's something's got to give, right? It's either gonna be build quality or some of the components inside.
My lad, I talked to him about a Chromebook, and he wouldn't prop his door open with it, so.
I got to agree with them. My little boy, he's only 9, and he was saying, "Daddy, I want a laptop." Okay, well, you're getting a Mac, aren't you? No, I want a Chromebook. What? You want a Chromebook? And I said, you know what they are, don't you? Well, I didn't actually say that, you know, but you can fill in the gaps. I didn't actually say that, though. I just thought it. And
I would have said it.
Did it rhyme with shit?
And so I'm going to just get a cheapo second-hand MacBook Pro. He's not having a blooming Chromebook or a Windows computer. Not doing it.
You're going to get
you hear me?
You're going to get a MacBook Pro at your head at high velocity on Christmas morning then, mate. If he says he wants a Chromebook, he'll have a Chromebook. Atlee, what's your cool thing, man?
Someone's leaked the specs for the new Fitbit Charge 3 that's supposed to be coming out later this year. And it's finally going to be waterproof or water resistant enough to swim in. So I'm very excited about that because I wasn't looking forward to having to buy a second device to track my swimming.
Are you a Fitbit fan?
I am. I was a huge Microsoft Band fan, but of course, like so many other technologies, did not make it. It did not make it for a couple of reasons. I guess the next best thing I found was the Fitbit. It was the closest thing to it. And it works great with Windows 10. So I'm happy with it. Syncs with my phone. Syncs with every phone I have, basically. So
Is $150 a bit dear, though?
Nah, that's basically what they cost.
Right.
The Fitbit is about $150. I think the Band was $200, actually. It was $199.
Muller had three of those, and he sent every one of them back to do with the connection on the battery. It was just the
for the Band. Yeah, no, there was definitely a technical flaw. What happened was the Microsoft Band, the battery was actually in the place where the clasp was, and there were wires connecting it up to the device, which was obviously under the screen. And the problem is that the way the Band was built and the wiring was done, eventually that thin wire inside there got fractured and would end up having problems charging, and he would just lose charge. And the Band 2 was rife with that. I think I replaced five of them. I still have one completely brand new in the box. It sits with my collection of technology that has been.
Muller had three. And
I loved it. I absolutely loved the Band. It was one of my favorite devices. And it actually was the one that sort of kicked me in the butt and got me back into, you know, trying to get back in shape.
Sure. Yeah, no, Muller had a couple, and he wore them right side up and wrong side up to see if that was a difference, and it meant no difference.
Yeah, no, I actually wear my Fitbit shit. Like that too.
It was right, but shit. And the three never came out, so there you go. Ian, what have you got as a cool thing, pal?
I've got something a bit different. We are all geeks here, so... I was out shopping today. I'm a fan of comics. People may or may not know this. And this turned up.
Oh, man.
These are comics heroes from the 70s, been redone for the modern age.
You knew that was going to happen eventually, eh?
Oh, the Valiant.
Really good. Oh,
the Vigilant. Sorry.
The Vigilant. It's based on the old Valiant. Britain has a great history of creating these anthology comics rather than the US sort of thing where you guys mostly have one character. We have a number of short stories all in one comic. And back in the 70s, this was one of them called Valiant. And they've redone some of the characters. The artwork is superb. The storylines look excellent. It's, again, aimed at our age, our age group market. So it's not frightened to be a slightly more edgy than it would be if it was a kid's comic. Brilliant fun. I've had a read of a few pages of it just this evening. $3.99. Go grab one or $2.99 if you get the digital one from the 2018 store. Which is still the most successful anthology comic in the UK.
This looks
great.
This looks fantastic.
I am $3.99 out of pocket.
You can buy that at Smith for $3.99. And if you want the proper one, they're available in Smith's. I bought mine in Smith's this morning. If not, you get a digital copy because they've got a nice app.
Yeah.
Well, the print copy is $3.99 straight away. Online, you can buy it for delivery.
It's lovely.
Digital edition $2.99. Not having digital, said that.
$4.99 US dollars, so yeah.
Unless it goes yellow at the corners and curls, not a comic.
These are not our British comics were printed on bog roll, weren't they? Back in the day, the cheapest paper known to man.
In my office, in my mum's loft, mum and dad's loft, I've got a edition 1 2000 AD, the one with Dredd in the middle spread where he's crawling through the
That's not, he wasn't in the first edition. I'm geeky enough to know he wasn't on the first. He isn't in the very first one.
He is.
He's in the second one. He was in issue number 2.
Oh, it's not as worth as much as I thought then.
No, it has a space spinner on the front. That's number 1. No
one
has
a thing
on the front. I'm geeky enough to know.
I remember the space spinner, so I must have had one, but I just got the pictures wrong then.
But it hasn't got Dread in it. It hasn't got Dread in it, definitely.
Oh, I've got to find it now. I'm going to spend the next week sat in my mum and dad's loft sweating my arse off.
Reading comics.
And I've got Roy of the Rovers edition 2. I haven't got one, though.
Oh, but that'll be nice to have, though. They're all nice. Yeah. They're worth bugger all, really.
I used to get Warlord.
But they're nice, to have as things.
Because Warlord,
and all the artwork.
They merged Eagle with, I want to say Valiant, but they merged Eagle with something and made Warlord.
No, they merged. And not all the
merged two, and Warlord was one of the, was in the Eagle, or he was in the other magazine, and Warlord became the name of the
the magazine. All of them, IPC and Fleetway used to run all these comics in the 70s.
Right.
When they weren't doing very well, what they do was they just merged two together to keep them going.
Right.
And they didn't give any kind of amount of monkeys about any of the things they did. And it's a real shame when you find out a lot of the art that they made for all these comics were used to to keep tables from rocking. Once they printed the paper, the original art was used to stop the tables rocking, was used to stuff holes in vents and things. There's tons of stuff that got lost from that era.
Right. Price, issues, total £227 for a version 1, 2000 AD.
You know, it's not what the Marvel-y stuff's always made.
Yeah. Cool. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Campion? I've got my brain fart then, stroke. Jesus.
You can get me at Campion UK on Twitter. I'm in the chat room. All my running stuff goes on Instagram. That's Campion UK as well. That covers me.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. Mr. Jeff Gamet, you'll be... Where are you? And the answer is England.
Soon. Very soon.
To England land.
Yeah, I'm flying out to England on the 30th. London specifically. And I'm so looking forward to this. But until then, you can find me at magobserver.com and on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Jay Gamet, and on Gobs Podcasts. I kind of get around.
Excellent, mate.
Jeff, has Angela received her race number and details for the Great North Run yet?
Oh, yes. Yep, good. She has.
I really hope she's prepared, mate, because the Great North Run is one thing. It is great.
It is.
It's.
I'll have to get in touch with her and say hi on the day.
Yeah, we've been training together, even though I'm not going to be at the race with her. And some of our training has involved doing hikes up above Timberline, because we're in Colorado, we can do that.
I was going to say, Jeff, it's not like Boulder doesn't have some of the best trail running in the world.
Yeah, we're not lacking for places to train.
Exactly, yeah.
Does she know she's supposed to run? Because you just said hike.
Well, you run for part of your training, but then you hike for part of it as well.
Right, okay. Okay.
So, yeah. Angela's got this whole thing figured out. I mean, she has an incredible training program she's been working
through. No, I don't doubt that, Jeff. Yeah. My problem is I'm worried if she thinks she's got it worked out, and he hasn't.
She's pretty persistent.
Yeah, get that, actually, when I met her, and that's... So definitely. I hope the first time when you meet at campus, it's not mouth to mouth.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
But if it is, won't that be a story to tell?
No, No, this is not like a red wine out of your left boob kind of way. I'm talking mouth to mouth. Holy shit, she's not breathing. Where are you, man?
Well, you can reach me at... Sorry, you're talking to me, right?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, I heard someone else start. Sorry. You can reach me at atleehunter.com. You can also reach me on Twitter and Instagram at atleehunter. I've actually got a blog posting up on the blog right now asking for people to give me suggestions of things that they think are missing from podcasts about Microsoft stuff, so we can make sure that we hit everybody's needs.
If they
talk, so if you want to reach out there and leave me some comments, I'd be looking forward to it.
I mean, if they're talking about this network, mate, the answer will be content.
Well, but you know what? Content is great, but let's get the right content and make it fantastic.
Who thinks that Yorkshire's a country?
It's a pudding.
I just thought it was a pudding, yeah.
Yorkshire's not a country, it's a pudding. That's a great line. and last but by no means least, Mr. Ian Grant.
You can find me in Yorkshire. No, currently in Reading.
In the pudding of Yorkshire.
In the pudding of Yorkshire is where you'll find me. I'm on Twitter, at TIOABOA occasionally. I'm mostly in the chat room if people want me there. Hit me up in the Slack room. I'll be around somewhere at some point.
Excellent, mate.
But that's me. Excellent. Cheers.
And not in a hotel next week, hopefully.
Not next week, but I won't be available next week, but I will be a week after or two. So
tentatively.
Get Steve to give me a shout and I'll sort things out.
Mate, Steve is shouting at everyone. And it's working at the moment. We had an act on last week on the Max Show, so it was awesome. Not that he did that, I did that, but we got people flooding back to us. Manager and ranking, you get me at me ranking on Twitter. You can follow the network at British Tech. Please say thank you to our sponsors, if you possibly can, because they really do look after us, and we need you to support them because they support. Back again tomorrow for the Max Show. I'm working over the weekend, and I'm working all next week. Don't forget that next week all the live shows are on Wednesday, not Thursday, because we've got an event on Thursday that I've got to go to, and then we've got a rugby match on Friday evening, and then I've got to go to work after the rugby match, so I can't drink anything.
Oh.
Not good. Have a great weekend.